Seriously, it's that simple.
Hello, this is Martin Sheen, and you're listening to KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara.
Cue the conga playing penguins.
Live at you.
For real, for real.
Oh, yeah.
The program's about to begin.
Radio.
For the people.
Go. Come on.
The Mojo Hour of Power.
Radio.
Rewire.
For the people.
Oh, yeah, it's the Pocho Hour of Power, KPFK 90.7 FM. I love that intro. I'm Jeff Keller on a beautiful Friday at 3 o'clock, rocking with...
Hello.
What's up, Lalo?
Hey, it's Lalo Alcaraz, creator of La Cucaracha and a whole bunch of other stuff that you don't look at.
I understand, brother.
Oh, fully. How you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing great. You know, you're going to be slinging jokes this weekend at the Chateau and still shooting that little series we got going. And we fighting the power, man.
That's right. The dream's alive.
Hey, if we don't do it, who will?
And surviving.
Hey, if we don't do it, who going to do it, right?
Yeah, no, it's true. I got to tell you in the most lightest way here that I had a bad business week.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, a deal went through that was not supposed to go through, that was almost done. And but I realized it took me a week. You know, I think it's opened the door to, you know, endless other deals that will go through. So I'm right there with you with the dream.
You know, it's bad because I'll get off stage and people will come up, go, hey, you know, I'm producing this movie, blah blah blah, and so and so's in it, and I'd love to have you in it. I'm doing this play. I love to have. I'm like, all right, hit me up. Here's my info. Man, I'm still waiting.
Nada. Well, yeah, no, I understand. And this one was going to be different. This one was actually happening.
Game changer.
And then it didn't.
Was it a game changer?
Yeah, it was a game changer.
Oh.
And the guy that, the one that walked out on this just kind of crushed his own game. So whatever. But it's leading to lots of other stuff. So.
Okay. Was it
never give up?
Was it an ego thing for him? Was his ego involved?
Money? I don't know. Stupidity? I don't know.
Well, he could have been like I was when I was young, and I would just be one of them self. What do you call it? Would you
sabotage? Yeah, a little bit of that too. A lot of that.
Yeah, I burned a couple bridges when I was younger doing that. Yes, I did.
Yeah, so, oh, well, that's all right. I'm moving on, and I'm going to be bigger and stronger.
There you go.
And also, remember, people, everybody in show business, this is a small town. It's a very small town. That's all I got to say.
Let me tell you how small it is. I had burned this one bridge. And about 15 years later, a buddy was doing a movie and he wanted me in it. And so he goes, yeah, I want Jeff. It was only like a two-liner, right? It was not even, it was under five. And the guy says, yeah, I want Jeff Keller to do it. He goes, oh, no. Let me tell you what he did 15 years ago. Oh, I'm like, dang, y'all be holding grudges, man. Look at you.
Was he Mexican? Because, you know, Mexicans only hold grudges for 1,000 lifetimes.
Oh, my God. The guy, like, he wants to be a star. I'm like, no, I'll do 5 and under. I'm not working. I need it. What are you talking about? Oh,
it's not about ego anymore.
Not anymore. Back then, yo, I turned down. This is how crazy it was. I turned down two. Remember Island Pictures? They did Baps and a couple other movies.
Yeah.
So my manager calls me. They want to buy the script I wrote. It started at $100,000, right? And I'm turning it down. It got up to like $250,000. And the reason I turned it down was it was an interracial jazz piece about basically my parents, right?
Yeah.
And they want to make it all white and rock and roll.
Oh, yeah.
And I said to the guy, I said, you can't buy me. I'm an artist.
No, but that good for you, man. That's uncalled for.
Yeah, but now that script is still sitting in my computer.
I have one similar to that, but it was a comic strip editor a million years ago before I had my comic strip. La Cucaracha, which is 23 years young.
Come on, this now. Year. Come on.
And he said, yeah, you great cartoons, and he had my pitch, and he goes, I just got one suggestion. Can you make them like Latinos, but from a fake Latino country?
What?
And I said, and I'm sure that's been spoken in Hollywood too. And I was like, no, I can't. Back then I didn't know, but I practiced that, you know, specificity mm-hmm. is universality, right?
Mm-hmm.
The most interesting thing. And yeah, that's why, you know, yeah, no, we don't need to sell out for pennies, you know.
But that wasn't pennies, Lo. That was $250,000. That's like 20 years ago. That's
a couple wheelbarrows of pennies. Sure.
My manager's like, are you positive? I'm like, yes. Can't buy me. Who you think I am?
Oh, man. Live and learn. I learned a lot this time, still learning. And I'm going to just move on and succeed.
That's the beauty of this game, right? It's always something. You think you've seen it all, something else happens.
That's right. That's right. So no problem.
That's right. Bigger things.
That's right. Like the Pocho Hour of Power.
Come on, people. I know you listening. You ain't said
the pinnacle of showbiz. All these studio owners, CEOs are listening to this broadcast every week.
That's right. You ain't lying.
They're hanging on our every word. See what gems pop out of them today.
That's right.
But we've got a great show with Patricia Guadalupe, our correspondent from D.C., and I don't think she was here last week, right?
No, she wasn't. No.
No, we had the craziest show without her. The FCC is still writing up all our notes on that one. But
if it wasn't for Jimmy Kimmel, we'd be in trouble.
I know. God for Jimmy Kimmel. And also, thank God for Russell Contreras from Axios is going to be on and reporting from Albuquerque. Was he on? I think maybe he was on last week. And his cousin, Frank Contreras, from old Mexico. And the oldest part of Mexico, that as far as I know. Mexico City, Frank Contreras will be on to talk about, man, lots of Mexico news that is like crazy. I read some crazy stuff this morning in the LA Times about the latest crisis to hit the Mexican president. But we'll have Frank talk about that. He's an insider in Mexico.
Yes.
So I say it's time to strike up the band, guys. What do you think?
Band, can you put the drum? There you go.
Patricia Guadalupe, Ultra correspondent from Washington, D.C. Hail to Patricia, she comes to spread the cheese. She comes with all the gossip, she's here to spill the tea.
Hello, folks, and I'm glad to be back. I wasn't here last week because, man, I was teaching a writing class at Yale University, man.
What?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Tell us how that went, Patricia.
It was good. No Latinos in the class. But,
I was going to ask.
African American women and a couple of African American men, so it was a little more diverse than I thought. But I was the only Latina in the whole little little classroom there. So, but it was good. You know, we're trying to get more of them in there. You know, so I'm glad to be back now, and I'm glad that you know, you didn't become rich and famous, both of you guys. You know, the standing on your principles, because, man, you wouldn't be on the show right now, right?
That's one way to look at it.
I know you'd be at the at one of the cabanas over at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and, you know, after a couple of weekends there, you'd probably get bored to death. So I'm glad to be back, and I just want to start out with, if you think it's wild in old Mexico, D.C. is nonstop wild. This week, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, we've got an indictment from the former FBI director, James Comey. And it is the silliest thing in the world that he took a picture of some seashells a little while ago, and they were, it said, kind of laid out the numbers 86-47. And the Justice Department interpreted that as 86 meaning slang for getting rid of somebody, and that actually goes back to the Prohibition era, where there was a speakeasy on 86 Bedford Street in New York that was constantly raided. That's where it comes from. Yeah.
Wow.
Didn't know.
How cool. Yeah.
And so the fast forward to now, the Justice Department wants to go after him because they're saying that he was posted on social media that he wants to assassinate Trump. I said on social media that their key witness is Sally, who sells seashells by the
seashore.
So, Sally, if you're listening, the FBI is looking for you. The FBI is also looking for Jenny from 867-53-9, if you remember that song. So, you know, remember that one. I mean, all joking aside, this is probably one of the craziest things you're going to hear coming out of D.C., where the Justice Department seriously is trying to bring this to trial on charges of trying to assassinate the president.
Isn't this the second time? Like, they they tried this.
Yeah, and the first time the court laughed it out, the judge laughed it out of court and threw the case out. And this is probably going to happen the same thing. But here's the thing that people forget is that when you're falsely accused of something like this, you have to go find a lawyer, pay that person a lot of money to basically defend yourself against something even as ridiculous as, I took a picture of some seashells, and that means that I'm trying to kill the president. Comey has the means, yes, of course he does, but still, it's a lot of money, it's a lot of time, it's a lot of ridiculousness, and that's what they're trying to do. They try and basically, you know, tie you up financially or your time with these sorts of ridiculous things. Because that's what this particular Justice Department is doing, with the acting attorney general saying, I'm here at the pleasure of the president, forgetting that the Justice Department is supposed to serve the people of the United States, not the president himself. So that's one of the wildest things. And then up the street from the Justice Department, you have the Supreme Court of the United States decision on a redistricting case in Louisiana, 6-3, throwing out a new map that would give a couple more seats to African Americans in Congress from Louisiana. And ironically, the only Black person to have been invited to the state dinner with King Charles and Queen Camilla was Clarence Thomas, and he voted against, he voted with the majority to throw that particular case out. He's been classified or called as somebody who took the ladder away from the people after him because he was most definitely took advantage of affirmative action when he was at Yale Law School,
Michigan State.
It's probably not going to affect the midterms too much, although it may give the Republicans a slight advantage. But a lot of those maps have already been drawn up, and the people who are running are already on there. So to switch around a lot of these ballots, they're going to try and do that in Florida to give Republicans a little bit more of an advantage. And that's going to be coming up in the state legislature down in Florida next week. But it's looking still like the midterms are trending more and more towards the Democrats. You only have, I think it was like 70%, according to a Pew Research Center and the AP Associated Press survey, said that 70% of the people are against what's going on in Iran and the U.S. You have gas prices that are almost twice what they were last summer or last year at this time. Going into the summer season, which is, of course, when a lot of people travel and drive around. And in the key states for the midterms, including in Michigan and Ohio, gasoline is at least $1.50 more a gallon than it was last year at this same time.
Well, so, I will say this about Clarence Thomas, and my mom said this a long time ago. Never trust a brother with two first names.
Yeah, so
I'm just saying.
and you know that his wife is a white conservative woman. Nothing mm-hmm. wrong with that, but she is one of the people who's involved in an organization that helps vet judges that on the federal bench, which is an incredible conflict of interest. And she continues to say, I don't talk about any of the judges with my husband. And of course, you can believe that or not, but the likely, whether even if that's true, it doesn't look good for you to be married to a Supreme Court justice when part of your job is to help vet judges for the federal bench.
Right.
So,
and this the thing about Clarence that drives me crazy is he, when he's, you know, he did close a loophole with affirmative action case that he used to get into college.
Oh, yeah.
That's
the
thing that drives me crazy. You use it, but then you close it so nobody else can.
Yeah, so when he got to the second floor, he took the ladder away. That's basically what the cartoon about him has been saying quite a bit, that, you know, I'm fine, so screw you, everybody else after me. And then he, you know, he goes to one of the college campuses a couple of weeks ago and talks about how the progressive movement is not helping. And, you know, there's a lot of things that are really bad about what's going on with a lot of the people on the left, you know, trying to incite fear among folks. And this is all part of the, you know, it may sound like a conspiracy theory here, but this is all part of a plan that the Republicans are trying to do to, okay, Trump is going to leave at some point, but they want to stay as long as possible. And so they do all of these things to make it easy for Republicans to be the majority from the local level all the way up to Congress. And the last thing that they figured on was that this Iran situation was going to turn into a complete quagmire with gas prices going through the roof and a lot of people wondering, what is it that, why did we have to do this? And with the defense secretary going to the Senate and the House Armed Services Committees this week and basically pulling a Bondi, started yelling and saying that the scariest thing is not the Ayatollahs, it's the left and Democrats, you know, and that if you don't support the president, then you're not being patriotic. And even some Republicans called him out on that, but they were asking him questions that anybody would want to know, such as, what's the strategy here? What's the plan? How much is it going to cost? It's already costing $25 billion, with a B, dollars for the U.S. involvement in Iran. And there's no strategy. There's no looking forward. The Iranians are dug in. And they're not gonna come to a negotiating table with the U.S. coming to them with just demands. Oh, we demand that you open up the Strait of Hormuz, for instance. And the Iranians are saying, you know, what kind of negotiation are you doing when you're just demanding for us to do things? And then, you know, in Europe, you know, all the European countries are completely against what's going on in Iran. And flying under the radar is this enhanced border security partnership where members of the EU can travel to the U.S. without a visa up to 90 days. Now the U.S. is telling the EU members, if you want to come to the U.S. even for 5 minutes, you're going to have to give us access to the data of all of the travelers. And of course, the EU Parliament is up in arms about this, because why would they want to give up all of this data information to the U.S. Homeland Security? And it's all, you know, a lot of people are saying because it's in retaliation for what the U.S. thinks is the European countries not going along with them on what's happening in Iran. And then you had, you know, King Charles come over here for a few days and gave a master class in sarcastic, dry British humor in Congress, where he basically, you know, talked about NATO. He talked about the decorations that the White House said, okay, it looks kind of different here, in very floral kind of British. And then the gift that Charles and Camilla gave to Trump was a bell from a ship that sunk called the HMS Trump. And it flew right over the heads of the U.S. press. But in Britain, they definitely saw the sarcasm in that, because a bell end in slang in Britain.
FCC, are you paying attention right now?
Yeah. A bell end is a sarcastic or slang in Britain for the male appendage. And Trump in British slang means who farted. So it was quite a visit. It was quite a visit.
And so to be fair, the original name of the ship was the Trump-tanic. So
I'm just saying that's it. The Trump-tanic. Everybody hopping on it.
Yeah, and then Trump, his reply was, did I tell you that my mom had a crush on you, Charles?
That's so creepy.
Yeah.
And then you know what he did? Then he put a 25% tariffs on all their imported cars to America.
Yeah, you know, but if you haven't listened to Charles's speech in Congress, you definitely have to listen to it, because everything that he said was very subtle little digs at Trump, subtle digs at Congress, basically saying, what are you doing? Where are the checks and balances here?
Yep.
You know, all of these things. And then they went over to New York to the 9/11 memorial there.
And but then you know what was interesting? When he gave that speech about, you know, the checks and balances, both sides stood up and applauded.
Yeah, they sure did.
Which
they
was crazy.
They gave him a standing ovation. And in fact, Trump said, no one has ever stood up and given me a standing ovation in Congress. And they do it for him. Oh, my God. He said that, too. You know, so
that's because the Heritage Foundation is running the country, not Trump.
And guess what they served at the state dinner? It wasn't McDonald's, but it was not too fancy. Ravioli and peas was what they served at the state dinner.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
Was that leftovers from the correspondence dinner?
Yeah, you know, the leftovers from the correspondence dinner, the Hilton Hotel gave it to some food banks, and it was steaks and lobsters that they 2,000, 3,000 steaks and lobsters that they gave. And that's the other thing too, that happened, as everybody knows, last Saturday, for the first time ever, the president decided to go to show up to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It's been at the Washington Hilton every year for the past at least 40 years. Nothing has ever happened there. And this year, the security, and I've been to that dinner a couple of times. I didn't go this year, but the security this year, from what reporters there were saying, was nothing like it was before. You would get an invitation with a QR code in it that had to match your ID, so it wasn't transferable. They did not ask for IDs this time. There was only one magnetometer, you know, one of those metal detector things, right in the ball, right the floor right above the ballroom. And to get into that hotel to go to the ballroom, you have to go down three flights of stairs or an elevator. But the security is usually very, very tight, especially when the president shows up, as you can imagine. And in even in, a lot of the people there and some former Secret Service people were saying, you know, where's all the security? What's going on here? So what happened was that this guy from California, had checked into the hotel, and then ran right past the Secret Service people at the magnetometer one. With a bag that apparently contained a shotgun, a rifle, some pistols, and there was all kinds of stories about, oh, he had been killed. Not true. He shot at one of the agents. Not true. It's true that one of the agents got hit. Fortunately for that agent, he was wearing a bulletproof vest, but he was hit by another agent.
Friendly fire.
Yeah, and they tackled him. That's how they got him. They tackled him. They stripped him down to his pants to see if he was wearing any kind of bombs or anything. And so he was taken in, and in court on Monday was charged with trying to assassinate the president, although one of the people who is going to be assigned to be his lawyer said he never said that. He said that he was after officials in the Trump administration. And the difference is that the charge would be different if you're accused of trying to kill the president rather than trying to kill one of the members of the administration.
Yeah, he was.
But
he was
Trump.
Go ahead.
Real quick. When he got interviewed by Nora Roberts, confirmed that he was talking about him because it mentioned a pedophile.
Yeah. And then if you saw that interview on 60 Minutes, he went after her and said, "Oh, I can't believe this. Oh my God," he went attacked her. And right after the dinner was canceled, and it's supposed to be rescheduled within the next 30 days, they haven't come up with a date yet, the president goes over to the White House, still dressed in a tux, and so was Kash Patel and all the other officials, still dressed up to the nines, and said, this is why we need a ballroom in the White House. Now that particular hotel has a capacity of about 3,000 to 4,000 people. The ballroom at the White House that he wants would have a capacity of about 1,000 people. And again, this was a private event. was just not a, this was not an event that was sponsored by the White House. The president is invited as a courtesy, and he has never gone until this year. So a lot of people, especially on the conspiracy front, say, oh, well, you know, the security was really lax because this is the first year that he went, and this was all staged for him to get some support for a ballroom at the White House. And of course, several members of Congress, including Senator Lindsey Graham, said, we're going to propose legislation to give him money to put in the ballroom. The legislation is probably not going to go through, but there are plenty of people up in Congress and the Senate who continue to carry water for him. And one of them is Lindsey Graham saying, this is why we need that particular ballroom. But, you know, so what are you saying, that you want the president never to leave the White House? That's basically what you're doing.
Well, that's Lindsey in the closet, Graham. Let's be real. But see, this is what happens when you have a dinner like that, mm-hmm. and you don't have a stand-up comedian. This never happened when you had a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, you know, they hired a comedian who said, I'm not going to stop attacking the president. And so they got rid of that person. And then they brought in somebody who they said was a mentalist and not a psychic, because a psychic would have known that there was going to be a shooting.
That's right.
But
or the mentalist. Trump found out the mentalist was going to make the Epstein files appear, so he had to do something to stop that.
Yeah, I don't know what that particular mentalist was going to do at that dinner, but you know, it was probably going to be thinking that maybe we should open up the files, and here they are under your desk.
You know? Ooh, Melania is sleeping with her bodyguard. Oh.
Yeah, and of course, you all know that Melania came out and said Jimmy Kimmel should be fired because of a comment that he made days before the dinner.
About the age and the difference in their age.
Yeah, I mean, saying, oh, she's looking like she's preparing to be a widow, and I'm paraphrasing. And Melania, who has never said anything about the Obamas looking like apes in a video that Trump came out with, she's never said anything about any of the attacks that he's made, all of a sudden has a problem with Jimmy Kimmel. And the FCC now is asking ABC and Disney, which owns ABC, we want to take a look at all your licenses and all your paperwork.
Again.
And so, and Jimmy Kimmel is, of course, saying, I didn't do anything. And then the next day, after the dinner, it was Trump himself who basically was talking about his age compared to Melania when Charles and Camilla were there. And Jimmy Kimmel says, wait a minute. Okay, he made the same joke I did. And you want me to get fired, so why don't you fire him too? You know, that was part of his monologue last night. So.
More support for that.
Yeah.
Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah, it's just been one thing after another with all of the stuff that's been going on. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you coming and keeping up with all this. We're all going to need mentalists to help us with our mentalist problems after this guy gets out. But
oh my God.
Yeah. And you know, and one thing that no one has really been talking about too much is, like you said, Jeff, the Epstein files, you know?
Yeah.
And all of this is distracting from everything that everyone wants to know about, which is what is going on with the Epstein files.
And you know who's going to break out the Epstein files? Iran in a rap. Because they have been out trolling the troller.
Yeah, yeah. They have a really hilarious Lego video of Cash Patel. So they're not stopping.
They're going to release the files in Lego form.
They are. It's going to be hilarious.
Well, Patricia Guadalupe, thank you for joining us at Pocho Hour Power. As we know, next week is a fun drive. We put the fun in fun drive. So we look forward to you coming on and showing people why we need to support KPFK.
Oh, yeah. You know, you do. You know, because we have fun on here, but we also tell you all of the stuff that's going on. So, you know, we're keeping it real, folks. So open up your wallets starting now. Get going.
That's right. That's right. Well, thank you, Patricia. We'll see you next time on the Pocho Hour Power.
All right, guys.
All right. There she goes. And let's go to a short break and return with Russell Contreras from Axios. Sorry, Frank, I had to do it in reverse alphabetical order. But you guys fight about it at the family carne asada. All right. We'll be right back with more Pocho Hour Power.
KPFK, this is Charlie Gonzalez. The Dodgers began a six-game road trip this evening with three games against the St. Louis Cardinals, followed by a series against the Houston Astros. The first pitch by Matthew Liberatore is at 5:15 on Spectrum Sportsnet LA. The Lakers face the Rockets in Game 6 of the first round of the NBA playoffs tonight at 6:30 on Prime Video. After falling short in Game 5 with Austin Reeves back, they're looking to clinch the series with the Oklahoma City Thunder waiting in the second round. UCLA baseball is still the number one team in the nation. They face Michigan State on the road in a three-game set beginning today through Sunday. All the games can be streamed on Big Ten Plus. This has been Charlie Gonzalez with your KPFK high-speed sports update.
Hey, this is Lila Downs. You're on KPFK. You're listening to the Pocho Hour of Power.
Oh, yes, the Pocho Hour Power, KPFK 90.7 FM. And we're cruising on this Friday.
Wow, you're born to be the smooth jazz DJ here in the quiet storm, Jeff.
Hey, but I'll tell you what, though, that Rick James, we tell them they all can go to hell. That's how I feel when I'm on stage, because 25 minutes of my act is about Trump. So he can go ahead and arrest me. I don't care.
8647. No, yeah. And I got to say, that Rick James stage show, I saw a lot. We saw it last year, I think. Oh, my God. It was so good. It was like, I think the Michael Jackson stage show is coming up. So I can't wait to see that in Hollywood.
Oh, it's out right now. Yeah, it's there right now at the Pantages.
Oh, I love it. I'm going to go see it because it was raucous.
Oh, with Rick?
Oh, with Rick, it was raucous. And the audience was like going to Black Church on Sunday. It was amazing.
You know,
I've never been, but I felt like I have been.
I hung out with Rick one time for his birthday.
Holy moly.
After he was at the Greek and they cut him short because of the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so Rick is sitting there with the old and young super freaks and got his shirt unbuttoned and got the medallions. And so I said, hey, Rick, you know, how'd it feel only playing like 10 minutes? He said, Jeff, I get $50,000 when I play 5 minutes or 50 minutes, so F them.
Ka-ching.
I'm like, all right, Rick, let's have another cocktail.
All right, that's an awesome story. But so well, we have another awesome storyteller. I think it's time for his theme song, though.
Yeah, man. Go ahead, Russell.
Welcome, Pochis, Pochexes, Pochianas. It's really good to be with all of you.
This week, of course, was the big news that the Supreme Court made its long-awaited decision on the Voting Rights Act. And, of course, it decided to gut Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which prohibited racial discrimination or discriminatory gerrymandering, meaning that more than 60 years of the Voting Rights Act and creating minority-friendly districts is now about over. And as we speak now, various southern states are considering whether they should redistrict some of those seats right before the 2026 elections to make sure that those seats are not minority, quote-unquote, minority-friendly and go back to the way it was prior to the Voting Rights Act. But this time that they narrowly, narrowed the voting rights law, the nation now is more diverse than it was in 1965. Back then, about 89% of the country was white. Today, it's 59%. So it's a dramatic thing. A lot of minority-only districts are created, but we have people of color spread around the country. So it's not sure about how this will enact. Remember, last time we talked, the multiracial patient population is one of the fastest growing groups in the United States. It has served 276% from 2010 to 2020. And Latino and Asian American populations have driven most of the nation's growth, reshaping maps in Texas, Arizona, and Georgia. So it remains to be seen how this will affect, because the nation has fundamentally changed since 1965. It's growing more diverse. We're intermarrying, and the nation is very different.
We having kids. They're not.
We are having kids.
They're right? Not.
Certain people are going to die, and me and Jeff are going to multiply.
Come on, baby. Come on. Speak on that right there.
We've
already multiplied, man. That's
That's right. That's right.
I ain't done.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, there's this cousin I who told me to call you and wanted to know. You know Jeff? And then showed me a photo. I'm like, yeah. And then showed me a photo of her child. And I'm, whoa, wait a minute. So, just what I put it out there. The thing about the Voting Rights Act, just going back there. You know, we have to consider how different. To be fair, the nature of voting discrimination has changed since 1965. Back then, it was literacy tests, poll taxes, and explicit racial bans. Now it's often centered on district lines, voter ID laws, polling access, tribal voting rules, administrative hurdles. It's very difficult to prove discrimination on voting it is today as it was 60 years ago. But that doesn't mean the fight's over. What's going to happen is that these legal fights will shift to the state courts and Congress and the 2026-28 elections. So that's where we're going to see the battle. It is far from over, but definitely the rules have changed.
Yeah, no, it's crazy because people forget, like in the small towns, they don't have DMVs that are open where they can get IDs and driver's license. You know, they may have to go 50 miles to get a new ID or a new driver's license.
And that's a good point, because especially in Native American reservations and indigenous reservations, they are allowed, the tribal governments can give it their ideas, and then they're allowed to decide how those IDs are doled out. The federal government can say, your ID, this is not good enough, you need a real ID. But remember, a lot of tribal nations have signed treaty agreements, and it's up to the tribe to decide what their ID is, not the United States,
right?
Regardless of real ID. So that's a political battle that's still down the road and will need to be discussed.
And I say donate to the ACLU, because they are suing the government so much, it's not even funny. That's where I'd start.
Oh, and make sure that you get your passport now, because if you wait, your passport will have Trump's face on it.
Yeah.
So get it now.
That thing, it looks like it's meant to ward off not evil, but good.
Oh, my God.
He wants he likes that photo? I mean, come on. Anyway,
well, today's May 1st. I know this is May Day, but it's also the first day.
Woohoo!
AAPI Month, Asian American Heritage Month, Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month.
All right.
And a new report called the Social Tracking of Asian Americans in the United States from the Asian American Foundation. They issue an annual report. The report found that Asian Americans report higher levels of anxiety, than any other racial group in the United States. Right now, as Washington hardens its policies on immigration, citizenship, and even the relationship with China, public attitudes about Asian Americans are shifting in parallel. Right now, around 44% of Asian Americans right now say they feel worried about life in the United States. And the Asian American groups, they're the only group in the United States whose worries outweigh hopes, about 40%. This is, you have to remember, 66% of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders support DEI programs, and that's the highest level of any racial group. It's 40% overall. So the stereotypes that Asian Americans aren't interested in diversity, this poll shows that's not true. They're widely seen, as we talked about, the quote-unquote model minority, they're seen as successful in their place in the United States. But this report shows that there's a more fragile lived reality marked by anxiety, discrimination, and political concerns. When you looked into this report deep down, it also, there's this hardened attitudes among others toward Asian Americans. More than 1 in 5 U.S. adults say Chinese Americans pose a threat to society. And nearly 1 in 4 adults believe Asian Americans are, quote unquote, more loyal to another country than the United States. This comes at a time where about 40% of people, all adults, can't name one famous Asian American in the United States. Jeez. The one that used to top when they would cite was Charlie Chan, and of course he's not Asian American. So they can't even identify Bruno Mars or former president, Vice President Kamala Harris. This is at a time where Asian American hate crime was really high, but it's declined last year, but it remains far above pre-pandemic levels. So we're seeing some reverse hope is from the reverse anti-Asian hate that we saw during the pandemic, but attitudes and worry, that's not going away.
Man, the first one that came to my mind was George Takei, Mr. Sulu. Ooh,
Mr. Sulu?
Yeah. That was the first one that came to mind.
That was a good one.
I forgot that Bruno Mars is Filipino.
Yeah, you know, in the disco era, you know, this is when you and I were younger, Lalo, and I think your mom snuck you into some disco clubs when you were a teen. That song, it was sung by an Asian American one, "If I Can't Have You, I Don't Want Nobody." That one, that song there.
Yvonne Elderman or something. I forget her last name. Yeah.
Yeah, she was Asian American. She was one of the first Asian Americans to have a hit song on the top Billboard. I think it was perhaps number 2.
Great.
So we, you know, and it's time that we're celebrating the 250th anniversary of the United States. The Asian American Federation, or Foundation, excuse me, they're going to have their own 250, giving you an education of what Asian Americans have done throughout the country and throughout the country's history. And it's not what you think. They've been here since the foundation, and they have helped build the country, but yet they've faced some harsh and terrible discrimination and racial violence that even today we don't know much about.
That's right. Asians, basically Chinese, and Mexicans built the railroads.
Come on now.
And let's not forget Filipino Americans. They were there too.
And Filipinos, and maybe some Irish cousins.
Yeah. And Japanese too as well. Japanese Americans were,
that's right, that's
were
right,
involved in the Chicano movement. So we got there. And next week, Lalo and Jeff, I will be looking at law. Did you know that law firms right now are going through their own AI revolution? That a lot of law firms, they train their junior lawyers, junior associates, by giving them billable hours, training them on the law. Well, AI can do it now, and a lot of law firms are considering, well, do we need these junior associates? This could have a profound impact on the law industry in general, because if you don't need associates, you can just have partners and a bunch of AI bots finding that. Problem is, AI sometimes makes up legal cases. So when somebody's trying to sue Lalo because he's overbuilding his mansions out there in Dana Point, the law firm will make up cases. Lalo versus Jeff, or Lalo versus Gustavo, cases that didn't even exist. And that could be a problem as people go forward, because law firms, they really thrive off their reputation and their thrive about knowing law and data. This is posing a question. And some law firms that are able to get ahead of it, they're going to be in better position as AI goes through the legal system. Even judges are using now. And that'll be in Axios.com next week.
Wow.
Wow, that's amazing. I learned about this in Claude versus Siri.
Claude versus... Well, I learned about this because I downloaded some of your cartoons, Lalo, and then I like do a cartoon in the style of Lalo, but from the perspective of Russ. And everything had flour tortillas becoming really top. I think flour tortillas beating up on Darth Cholo Vader. Yeah, it was really good. I was going to share it with you, but I thought you'd get upset because it looked a lot like cucaracha. And
my bot's going to sue you now.
Yeah, your bot's going to sue me. Yeah, but you know, but remember, like what they said in Rocky IV, sue me for what? I got no money. I'm a poor journalist.
Well, double goes for me. So thank you, Russell Contreras. How can people get a hold of Axios and all the great information over there?
Go to axios.com/newsletters. Get Mike Allen's AM newsletter in your box every Monday through Sunday and at PM. And get the Finish Line. Top advice from the top CEOs of the country. Get it in your inbox for free. Ahoy!
You heard that. No AI CEOs. Just real humans.
Yes, no. Our CEO, Jim Van Hyen, he's very much real.
All right. Well, Russell, thank you so much for joining us on the Pocho Hour of Power here on KPFK.
We'll see you next week. Ahoy!
Yeah, ahoy, man. Yeah. A double ahoy day. Two of them. We're so lucky. And now, last but not least, Russell's cousin, Frank Contreras, cousin from another uncle. Something like that.
Something like that. What? Contreras. Hey, man. Hey, guys. How's it going? It's Friday, May 1st in Mexico. That's a national holiday. So
that's right.
Everybody's off today. We have a three-day weekend here in Mexico.
It's known as the Uno de Mayo.
Yeah. It's a national holiday.
Very good. First of May. I like that.
Yeah. It's good to hear Russell. Good to hear Patricia Guadalupe. I wanted to ask her, was she at that White House correspondence dinner? What was that all about?
I think she was not. And she said that that's okay because she hates lobster. So
okay. So she didn't miss anything. Yeah.
Plus, we wouldn't have saw her because, you know, being a minority, we know where the exit is.
That's right. Just keep your eye on the outdoor.
That's right. Since we're pop up, we gone.
I don't know. I would have been grabbing the bottles of wine to go drink in the parking lot.
Guys, yeah. So this week, you guys heard the news. Claudia Sheinbaum got a bomb from Washington. Sinaloa politicians, the United States government basically accusing Mexican politicians of being directly involved with drug trafficking. These are people who are in Sheinbaum's Morena Party, the left-leaning Morena Party here. So, you know, it's like, how do you respond to that kind of an accusation? The president stepped up and said, what? Show us some proof. Now, this is a big contrast to what used to happen not too long ago. The United States would say, we have a narco in Mexico, extradite him. And Mexico would jump up and say, how soon do you want him, right? And that has changed. President Claudia Sheinbaum says, no, not that anymore. If you think that, you know, our politicians in Sinaloa State are involved with drug trafficking organizations, show us some proof. So there you go. Claudia Sheinbaum stepping up and kind of matching right up to Donald Trump and the Justice Department here under these accusations. It would be pretty dramatic.
Our politicians, our senators, and our congresspeople, they take money from drug dealers. They take money from Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah, those are drug dealers, definitely. Definitely, man. So, you know, this has a lot of implications for the relationship between the United States and Mexico. You know, the United States government oftentimes pounds on Mexico. All political parties put up border barrier walls between the two countries. We saw that happening even in the previous administration. Now they're putting up, you know, walls along parts of the border that are blocking wildlife, things like that. So it's always a big issue. But this this accusation really kind of goes deep because basically the U.S. government is saying that the current federal government has people involved in drug trafficking. So Sheinbaum is taking this very seriously, guys, very, very seriously. You know, this whole thing about extraditions, immediate extraditions, that's all on hold now. Those kinds of things will not take place. Sheinbaum says, look, we have our own Justice Department in Mexico. We will conduct our own investigation. So, you know, it could come to the point where you start hearing threats from Washington, extradite him, or we're not going to move on with the negotiations of the free trade agreement, which, by the way, are underway under Donald Trump once again. And so there's always that kind of leverage that Washington and the current occupant of the Oval Office puts on foreign governments, right? There's always kind of something. You owe me this, and if you don't do that, I'll do this. These threats, right? We saw, you know, what happened in Venezuela, this military maneuver to seize a president. Whatever you think of that president, he was the standing president of Cuba, of Venezuela. Cuba pops into my mind, and that's because those are the next threats that are coming down in Latin America. So Mexico, again, standing by, waiting to see where does this go next. And, of course, one of the biggest issues is going to be trade. Mexico holds a strong card there. Mexico still, as we keep reporting here on the Pocho Hour of Power, Mexico, the number one trading partner for the United States. A lot of the vehicles you guys get, a lot of other products that you get, even, you know, as we reported recently, high-tech chips and things like that are being built and sent from Mexico into the United States. So this could be a major impact on the on trade if it goes into that. So people are wondering just how far will this threat to, you know, force the extradition of the Sinaloa governor, how far will that go?
This is a tough one, you know. I mean, I think she's just gonna probably just drag it out, but they're gonna, you know, she's getting accused from her own opponents in Mexico of being a narco, at least overseeing a narco country, yeah. Right?
It's really something how that message comes across, because in Mexico, it doesn't ring out that loud as it does in the United States. It's oftentimes a lot of U.S. media companies that are doing that kind of reporting that, you know, Mexico is a narco government and things like that. Here in Mexico, you don't hear that very often. You hear that from some of the opposition, but you guys know the opposition right now has been quite weakened in the last two presidential administrations. The Morena Party has really gathered a lot of public support. Sheinbaum's approval rating still up in the high 70s, if not in the 80s. There was an interesting poll, though, this week, guys, published by an English-language newspaper in Mexico City, and it was basically claiming that they're going to do their own index based on the kind of work that Sheinbaum's doing, and they're going to give their own analysis of, you know, what they think she's doing, and they gave her a 60% approval rating, quite low compared to what all other major newspapers, polling organizations, and such are giving her here in Mexico. So it's kind of strange. Whenever it comes to the United States, there's always kind of this, oh, they're messing up. Bad report card. And then when you ask the Mexican people themselves, most Mexicans, not all Mexicans, but, you know, a large percentage of the population are still supporting the project here in Mexico. So
I was going to say 60% is you know, that's pretty good compared to the prior presidents of Mexico, because Mexicans love to sit around and criticize the government and the president, and it's like a national pastime.
Everywhere in the world, but things have changed. I think you're right, Lalo. It feels like it's definitely changed. And then when you look at even a low rating, 60%, look at that compared to the guy sitting in the Oval Office, that guy with the big ankles.
He wishes he had 60%.
Yeah, that would be double of what he has right now, according to a lot of the public opinion polls. So,
yeah, that's right.
Sheinbaum's definitely going to be dealing with, you know, some tough stuff here. But she's saying, look, she's going to try to reframe this entire thing and say, look, this is really an attack on our sovereignty. That's what you're doing here. And if you try to do that, we're going to stand up against that. So she's kind of showing a tough side here. And a lot of Mexicans are glad to see it. I think a lot of people are saying, you know, we can't be bullied around by the bully in chief over there. This is not one of those situations with the seashells, guys. Come on. You know, you're not going to get us to extradite politicians just because you say we should. And so, you know, this is going to go a while, I think. I'm sure there's going to be every effort throughout the remainder of the Trump administration to try to, you know, put some kind of influence on Mexico, to try to change politics here, maybe even fund right-leaning political parties that are really floundering right now. These right-leaning parties in Mexico are not doing real great. I mean, that's
the
reality
of it. All over the planet, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's happening around the planet, as you point out. So yeah, Sheinbaum's going to be, you know, playing some hardball now with the U.S. president and with his administration. And I think, you know, it's going to be something to watch. How does she maneuver this? How does she try to reframe this whole thing and say, look, you know, if there are there accusations of this sort, then Mexico has all the